March 22nd. It's a Friday. And tonight, Fred again is playing at Wellington's Waitangi Park in what was the worst kept predicted secret of all time. In case you don't know who Fred is, he is a British DJ who rose to meteoric fame a couple of years back. And he loves to put on pop-up, last-minute secret gigs, aka this one in Waitangi Park tonight, which I luckily somehow managed to get tickets to. You had to sit in that weird virtual ticketek waiting room / lobby, aka what you had to go through to get Taylor Swift tickets. Was it triggering? Yes, it was. I would even say experience some PTSD. Kia ora, this is Newsable. I'm Imogen, and this is what's worth talking about. Newsable can reveal police spent $65,000 on a podcast profiling staff, but why won't the public ever get to hear it? The plight of New Zealand's migraine sufferers is laid bare in the country's first reported survey on the condition. We're probing the extent of the issue and speaking to a Kiwi who deals with migraines in her day-to-day life. And meow, start your engines. I apologise for that, everyone. Formula One lands in Aussie. What you need to know about this weekend's big race. All that's coming up in a moment here on Newsable.
Newsable takes time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.
The tightening of the coalition's purse strings is sparing no ministry or government department as more details emerge of job cuts across the public service. And over in our police force, cost pressures are also hitting home, with officers considering industrial action amid a, quote, insulting government pay dispute. But this morning, Newsable can reveal police commissioned a podcast for its internal intranet at the cost of $65,000, a total figure higher than the salary of a training officer spent on a podcast the public will never hear. Aaron, why did police come up with this 8-part podcast in the first place?
This apparently was all in the name of showcasing and role modelling, and I quote, best practice stories of the kind of behaviour and thought process police wanted from staff, as well as recognising that there is already exceptional policing happening throughout our organisation. So perhaps a bit of a pat on the back exercise, as well as trying to rustle something up to teach and inspire officers coming through. The nub of the issue, though, of course, is that this costs $65,000, which, like you mentioned, is more than the salary of a training police officer. Between the release in November 2022 and April last year, the series had 492 unique listeners. That equates to roughly $132 per listener. Police are defending that figure, saying anecdotal feedback was that staff listened to the pod in groups, at stations or in cars, telling me feedback was hugely positive and that it's now a lasting resource which staff continue to make use of. Interestingly though, when I asked for further audience numbers or evidence that the podcast remains indeed a lasting resource, well, the spokesperson was unable to provide that requested data. Police also noted not all downloads on Google Chrome had been counted due to an issue with its analytics service.
What did 65k go towards and why aren't they releasing it publicly?
I've obtained a breakdown via the Official Information Act of exactly how the cash was divvied up, and the 65 grand is effectively sliced into two categories. Concepting, pre-production, scripting, oversight and project management came in at $15,000, with recording, editing, travel and artwork racking up a further $50,000. Police say the podcast can't be released as the series was, and again I quote, always designed to be internal only, enabling staff to talk freely and frankly about their experiences while working for police, interviewed with the motivation that their experiences would provide valuable learnings for other staff. I'm told any moves to release the episodes publicly would have required a substantial re-edit at considerable cost.
And I understand this poddy cost significantly more than a similar podcast produced by the Defence Force.
Here is where things get really interesting. The Defence Force last year released its own 6-episode podcast, also profiling staff, and marking a decade on since the withdrawal of New Zealand's provincial reconstruction team from Afghanistan. This one was distributed to the general public. It reached 17,500 unique listeners and 29,300 downloads as of December last year. Now, the big difference is that the total cost of the product, from production to social media ads and tech equipment, was $10,504. That means the police pod cost 6 times as much, which I put to police, who say they can't speak to the comparative cost of another agency's content. It's worth noting an NZDF spokesperson says in-house resources were used where possible, with an external production company brought in for further skills and knowledge, resulting in low overheads for the project, and there were no travel costs.
Has the government responded at all to this?
It sure has, with what I would describe as a cautionary tone. Police Minister Mark Mitchell sent us a statement underlying his expectation that police take into account current fiscal constraints when making decisions. But he notes it was produced under the previous government, and he maintains operational spend of this nature is a matter for police.
Stuff Audio's senior journalist Aaron Darman, cheers for that. Here's a question that has some people divided online, and it's launched a kind of vigorous debate as well. Is it okay to peel an orange on an aeroplane? We'll talk about this a bit later in the pod. Think about it for a while. Listen to why I'm asking you it as well, and then you know what to do. Head to the Stuff Instagram page, NZ Stuff, and vote on whether or not it's okay to peel an orange on a plane. It's a condition that's more than just a headache. Migraines can cause widespread disability and pain that lasts for several days. In fact, a University of Otago survey published today in the New Zealand Medical Journal has found more than a quarter of people who live with migraine disease says it's caused them to miss school or work for more than 5 days over a three-month period. Half of the 530 people who responded to the survey had been unable to do household chores, and nearly a third had missed family or social or leisure activities during that same time frame too. Lead researcher Dr. Fiona Imlach, a senior research fellow at the university's Department of Public Health and co-founder of the Migraine Foundation, joins us now. Kia ora.
Kia ora.
How widely misunderstood are migraines? Do people just think it's a bit of a sore head, Fiona?
I think that's a very common perception. People often think, oh, it's a headache, just take a pill, take a Panadol, get over it. Migraine is not just a headache, as you say. It's a neurological condition, which is quite complex, and it affects a range of aspects in the brain. So a headache is one aspect of migraine. It also causes other symptoms. Nausea and vomiting is one of them. Sensitivity to light, sound, sometimes touch can be perceived as really painful. Like if you brush your hair, it can be perceived as painful. Sensitivity to smells. So this is all an indication that it's not just a headache. It's not just a pain in the head or a pain in the neck. It is actually involving different parts of the brain.
Do we know how many Kiwis deal with this condition?
Well, we estimated that there's 642,000, that's one in seven people in New Zealand, have migraine disease. And we don't know exactly how many people have chronic migraine, which is the most severe form where you have headache on 15 days or more a month. You can imagine how debilitating that could be. But from international research, we think that's between 7 to 10% of people with migraine might have the chronic form, or 1 to 2% of the population. So that could, you know, could be 40 to 60,000 people in New Zealand. So that's a significant number. And it varies. Like I talked about chronic migraine being the most severe. People have episodic migraine, we call it, where you have less frequent attacks. So some people might only have one attack a year or a couple a year.
Fiona, did anything surprise you in this study?
We asked survey respondents whether they felt judged or misunderstood because of their migraine disease by a range of people. And interestingly, we found that 40% said that they felt often or always judged or misunderstood in the workplace because of their migraine. And they also, you know, a similar proportion of people reported that they hid or minimized their migraine symptoms because they didn't want to be judged or misunderstood. So I think that really points to the fact that people with migraine know that they're judged. There's this misunderstanding about migraine as being a disease that people say, try to get out of things. Like people think, oh, you've got a headache, you say you've got a migraine, you don't want to do work, you're trying to avoid your responsibilities. And so people internalize this feelings of judgment and stigma and do try to minimize what they're experiencing.
Dr. Fiona Imlach, thank you for bringing us up to speed and helping me learn even more just now about all things migraine.
Thank you very much.
We're going to stick with this topic for just a while longer because, as Dr. Fiona just pointed out, there are misunderstandings around what migraines are and just how debilitating they can be to those who experience them. Ellie Fitzgerald, who you may know from Instagram as Loving Ellie's Belly, suffers frequently from migraines, and so she's here now to explain what they're really like. Ellie, wonderful to have you here.
Hi, thanks for asking me.
What does a migraine actually feel like? Because it's not just a headache, is it?
No. And that's, I think, one of the biggest misconceptions about them is just take a tiki Panadol and you'll be fine. It's just a headache. But everyone experiences them quite differently. But for me, it honestly feels like you've been hit by a train. I lose my vision. I lose my feelings. My half my body will go completely numb. I can get sick and I'm just out to it for a good 3 to 4 days. They are the most painful headaches you'll ever experience. They're awful.
Do you know if one's coming on? And then what do you do when you do experience one?
Yeah, so I experience, it's called aura, where I'll experience like a bit of a vision loss where it looks like, you know those little telescopy things we used to look down as kids and it would do
kaleidoscopes.
Yes. It looks like that. And then I know that I've got about 40 minutes to get into a dark room before I'm just completely out of it. It starts with the vision loss and then I'll have numbness down my body and then the headache will come on. And I just immediately, as soon as I know my vision's going, I'll take all my different pills and go into my little zen zone and that's it. That's me.
Wow. Is there anything that helps treat it?
Well, that's the hard part is there's so many different pieces of advice and medications you can take, Botox, there's so many different things, but because they're so different for each person and different triggers, it's hard to narrow it down to one thing that can, I guess, stop them or cure them. But I've tried different medications. I've gone to migraine clinics. The only thing I haven't tried is Botox. So that's my next thing that I want to do because I've had them since I was 9. So I'm just over them.
And when you get one, how long can it last for?
I suffer from cluster migraines, which means I could get one and then it could last me up to a week or 2 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah, some people will have where it will just last them a day or up to 3 days. But there is a thing called the migraine hangover, which is where you have your migraine and then for the next 3 to 4 days you are still just so under the weather and trying to recover.
And do you get them like once a month? Is there no rhyme or reason to when and why you get them?
Well, I've noticed a bit of a pattern of different things that can trigger me, and one is definitely when it's that time of the month.
Sure.
So hormones are a huge trigger for me, so I'm guaranteed to get one a month. And then if I'm stressed, if I get too much sleep or not enough sleep, eat too much chocolate, too much sunlight, flashing of lighting, and oh, there's so many things. So probably about 2 a month.
Ellie, you're very transparent online about how migraines affect you. Why is that?
I think because I don't know many people that suffer from migraines, and I want to raise awareness that if someone around them has migraines or in their workplace, that they know that it's not just a headache. It ruins your life, in all honesty.
Wow, well, Ellie Fitzgerald, really great to have you explain all of that to us. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Remember, if you're enjoying what you're hearing, chuck us a like and a follow on your favourite podcast platform, because not only will it help other people find us, it'll also mean you never miss interviews like this next one, aka Kiwi motorsporting royalty Greg Murphy is about to join us. Once a year, the glitz and glam of Formula One, the fast cars and big personalities, arrive in Melbourne as the racing season well and truly kicks into gear. And this weekend, the storylines are endless, from what's happening on the track between the likes of Red Bull, Ferrari and Mercedes, to what's happening off it as well, including the controversy surrounding Red Bull boss Christian Horner, who was accused of inappropriate behaviour by a female colleague. An internal investigation did clear Horner, but due to the whole saga, question marks hang over the future of Red Bull's star driver, Max Verstappen. To unpack all the drama we can expect over the coming days is motorsporting icon Greg Murphy, who's here now for Newsable Sport, proudly brought to you by Sky, your sport unrivaled. Hello, Greg. Thanks for being here.
Hey, no worries. Thanks, Imogen. Good to talk to you.
So what's the big ticket thing you're looking out for in Melbourne this weekend?
Good question. There's been a fair bit of stuff that's been off track so far this year in Formula One, which is sort of taken way too many headlines overshadowing the sporting side of things, mostly revolving around Red Bull. I mean, they're winning on track with Max Verstappen, but there's been, behind-the-scenes stuff.
Do you think he could really leave Red Bull after having so much success there? How big of a move would that be if he did? Because that's what's sort of come from this saga, right? There's now question marks.
Saga, that's the word. It is a saga, 100%. No, I don't think so. I think that's, again, speculative, and also it generates more headlines by people suggesting that this is something. And I think it's also had a bit of a push from his father, Jos Verstappen, who's clearly got some kind of involvement in the saga. And he's been suggesting that, which I think is just him trying to push his issues and trying to get a little bit of power himself in the game there. There's a rift there between him and Christian Horner. So I think it's just all been fabricated, and I just don't see a guy of Max's prowess and ability wanting to go off and start another journey. Why would you want to leave the most dominant race team in the most dominant race car?
Paint a bit of a picture for us who won't be there, Greg. What's it like at these big Formula One races? Is it as much about the wider event as what's happening on the track?
Yeah, very much. And Melbourne has done a brilliant job of that for a very long time. It's been a different event than a lot of Formula One events. A lot of Formula One events overseas really don't have a lot of support categories. They don't have as much build up, they don't have as much engagement with the city, the fans, and the focus on the city so much. You know, so much money is put in by the state government into this event, so they want to get their money's worth, and we demand that on this part of the world. You know, Australia, New Zealand, and others, America as well, we demand a lot for our money, whereas some events in Europe, it's just about Formula One at the track. They don't focus on the surrounding area and bring the sport into the city as much as what they do in Melbourne. So the atmosphere is electric. It's a phenomenal atmosphere. The fans come from far and wide. Australasian fans are full on when it comes to their sport, and motorsport is no different. So there'll be thousands of people heading over from New Zealand. There'll be thousands of people coming from Asia, tens of thousands, you know, for the event.
Oh, it sounds epic. And are you putting it all on Max, or do you reckon someone else might take the cake on Sunday?
That's the thing about sport in general, not just motorsport, but things do change eventually. They do change. And I think everyone will be turning up at a Formula One race just with that little bit of hope, because there are some other brilliant, brilliant drivers that probably aren't getting the results that they are capable of because of the cars that they are driving are just not quite on par with the Red Bull. So it only takes a very, very small shift or a small change in the car, the setup. They bring upgrades all the time to them, and one upgrade could make a big difference to someone else's car, which all of a sudden might put them in that challenging position to take it to them.
How thrilling. Greg Murphy, thank you for joining us. Sky Sport will have live coverage of the Formula One Australian Grand Prix from 2 p.m. Friday, with the feature race live on Sky Sport 2 and Sky Sport Now from 4:55 p.m. on Sunday. Sky Open will also have free-to-air live coverage of the race from 4 o'clock on Sunday as well. Let's turn back to the question I asked you earlier on in the pod, which is whether or not it's all good to peel an orange on a plane. This is a question someone asked on Reddit recently. We'll gloss over that. But it got some interesting answers, and then it also got me thinking about how pungent peeled oranges can be and whether or not it's then rude to force your fellow passengers to endure the pungent smell. A lot of people online said it wasn't rude to peel an orange on a flight. Someone said it's only rude if said person peeling said orange doesn't offer you any of it. Fair enough. Some said it's not rude, but it is weird. Some people then gave orange eating plane passengers advice, such as peel the orange pre-flight. And then someone wrote, "I've always welcomed a citrus aroma in flight." And to that I ask, always? Really? What does that mean? Sir, does this person lie and hope that someone on board will have an orange that they'll peel? Confused. Now, don't get me wrong. I do like the smell of an orange, even though it is pungent. But would I like it on an aeroplane? I don't think so. Also, the mess of peeling an orange would just stress me out if someone was doing that mid-flight next to me. Anyway, head to the Stuff Instagram page, NZ Stuff. Get your votes in. That's Newsable for today. I'm Imogen Wells. Have a lovely weekend, and I'll be back with you next week with probably more weird questions and polls for you to answer.
If you liked listening to this pod, help us make more like this. Visit stuff.co.nz/support.